After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big ol' move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
The following is a fourth-hand production.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth. Truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't always do good interviews, but when we do, we have no idea what to do with them. This is Hysteria 51.
All right, hot shot. So you got a golden ballerina between your knees and no rings. Now what?
Broadcasting on tape delay from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. I'm one of your hosts, Brent Hand, and tonight, kids, we got a special treat for you. In a few weeks, after our 100th episode, we've got an episode coming up on AI or artificial intelligence. Well, we just interviewed a TV writer, producer, and creator who just put out a great web series addressing the lighter side of AI. And it just so happens this gentleman also created a TV series you might just be familiar with, MacGyver. So this interview was intended to be a smaller part of AI, but we had such a fun time with it that we thought we'd release it as its own episode. So if you hear us refer to the episode, just know you'll hear that in a few weeks. And there's also less C-Bot in this part of it because we were interviewing him. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Boo, that's awful. On the positive side, it's even less work for me, so I'll take it.
Is that even possible for you to do less work?
Challenge accepted.
All right, man. You do you, dude. Anyway, well, without further ado, here's the interview with the creator of MacGyver, Lee Zlotoff.
And Brent, we are proud. Couldn't be more excited.
Exuberant
to be joined by somebody who's he's really slumming it by being on this show.
Yeah, before we had him on here, we had a little bit of audio troubles, but luckily had an avocado 4 foot of copper pipe and some Q-tips, and we got him back on the show.
Well, if you don't know that reference, you will soon. We would like to welcome to the show the creator of the one and only MacGyver, Lee Zlotoff.
Yes.
Lee, thank you for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm good, John. Brent, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being on.
Wait, I want to know what you did with the avocado. Never mind.
That's none of your business, Lee. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, you've heard about powering things with a potato. Avocados have amazing power. You just don't know about it yet.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
So, Lee, we're having you join us today because we are talking artificial intelligence. But before
we're not here to talk MacGyver.
That
was just a teaser.
But before we get into that, why don't you give our listeners just a little Reader's Digest on you and how you started in the business and what you're up to today?
Sure. Well, I, like many writers going into the entertainment business, I started by writing scripts and showing them to people, and people would say, "Oh man, I'm not going to buy this script, but I'll pay you to write something for me." So that was kind of how it started. I actually started in New York writing for a soap opera, which was a great gig, but not really what I was cut out to do at the end of the day, and eventually migrated to, you know, Los Angeles, where I've been more or less for the last, 35 years before I relocated to, you know, the place where 4 out of 5 aliens land when they land, which is New Mexico.
That's right.
I mean, it's just preferred. Roswell, come on. Yeah, you know, we got a whole town. It's their own town now.
So. You wanted to have your finger on the pulse so you knew where to go, is what you're saying.
I think New Mexico must just have better alien hotels.
Exactly.
Like on Alien Yelp, they just get better, more stars.
They give them a punch card every time they land. So third abduction's free, one of those deals.
You know, I kind of, when I got to LA, it took me about 3 years before I kind of broke through. And then I got an offer to be a staff writer on a TV series. And that led to, you know, a producing job on another TV series. And after about, 2.5 or 3 years doing that, I was approved apparently by all the networks to write pilots. And the first pilot that came along turned out to be MacGyver. So,
absolutely. Which, to go from, we'll let you write something for us, we don't know what, to a show that still lives in the cultural zeitgeist today.
Right, right.
This many years after its premiere.
And, you know, looking at your resume, two shows that I remember distinctly as a child because my parents watched them like crazy was Hill Street Blues and Remington Steele. I saw that you worked on, and both of those were my parents, especially my father's, like, favorites.
Yeah, listen, they were great shows. I had a great time doing it, and it was just one of those things. Actually, your listeners might be interested. I wasn't actually hired to write MacGyver. I was actually hired to write something else. They had sold this idea to ABC and needed a writer, and they were very excited because they said, "Oh man, this ABC loves this idea. It's never been done before." And so I got hired and I went in and I said, "Okay, cool. What is it?" And they told me. And I said, And I asked a couple questions. And then they said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, you know, there's a reason this has never been done before." And they said, "What's that?" I said, "I don't think it's going to work. You know, now nobody likes to be told their baby's ugly." But I explained to them why what they had was not really workable for a television series. And they kind of got a little upset. And I said, "Listen, I don't have to be the one to write this, you know." And they went, no, you got to fix it now." And it turned out that the fix was MacGyver. So,
oh, very cool. Yeah.
So, in fact, I MacGyvered that pilot to MacGyver my way to MacGyver.
Right. So. You MacGyvered the MacGyver. So you're saying the original Phoenix Foundation was a male dance show review.
Exactly. He was skirting that issue, if you noticed.
I'd like to say that, but no, it wasn't that. It wasn't that.
Okay. Well, hey, we want to ask some more questions about MacGyver, but we'll save that till the end. Let's get into today's topic. We're talking about artificial intelligence, and you have a new series
with a fantastic name that sums it up perfectly.
Absolutely. It's on the Santa Fe Network. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the series that addresses artificial intelligence?
Sure. Well, the series is called Our Own Devices, and it's a series of 12 webisodes. They range in length from only about a minute and 10 seconds to maybe 3.5 minutes long, so they're really short. We asked the question, what if Siri and Alexa started talking to each other? You know, we've got these devices in our lives and, you know, they're supposed to be able to learn. And so we were sitting around one Thanksgiving dinner not that long ago, and someone was complaining about what their Alexa was doing, and somebody else was complaining about what their Siri was doing. And I don't even remember who said, "Man, can you imagine if they started talking to each other?" And I said, "Yes."
You flicked them a quarter and said, "Thanks for the idea."
And, And so a friend of mine out here in Santa Fe is Danny Rubin, who wrote Groundhog Day. And I was having lunch with Danny, and I was telling him, I said, Danny, you know, I'm thinking of doing this little web series. And I told him what it was about, and he started laughing. And then he literally said, I could write the fuck out of that. And I said, okay, cool. And he said, you know, and I said, let's do it. And he said, okay, I can't remember the last time anybody I ever worked with from Hollywood just said, let's do it. You know, right. Okay, let's write a proposal. Let's go to our agents. Let's start walking around Hollywood. And I said, nah, we don't need those people. Let's just do this. That's so awesome.
Let's just make it.
Got his friend, Vicky Jensen, who co-directed Shrek and Shark's Tale. And she came in for a couple of days to shoot it for us. And, you know, and we made it. And now it's on the Santa Fe Network. And that's just Santa Fe Network, one word, .tv. And I think most of the episodes are up. I think by next week, all 12 will be up.
And it's like you said, it's so easy and quick to consume. You know, it's a lot of fun. And you also realize how bad that actually might be when they start not only talking, but like, as you said, learning from one another. It's funny, like everyone has these issues. Like my wife and I are guilty. We have Alexas all over our house, and we were watching TV. Oh, it's been a couple months ago, and all of a sudden Alexa just goes, calling Cody, and that's my cousin, and it called. I didn't even know that was a function. I guess something that the TV said, and I'm like, no, you know, computer off, and it turns off, and my cousin calls me back, and he's like, did you just call me? I'm like, not on purpose. I didn't mean to.
Well, there was this article recently. I mean, once we started doing this, I kept seeing all these articles. And one of them was, you know, this, I think it was in the New York Times, where this woman and her husband were having a conversation about one of his employees. And somehow Alexa understood her to be saying, A, record this conversation, and then B, send it to this employee.
Oh, what a nightmare.
and Alexa did that. And you know, she freaked out.
And I'm that sure was he was that, saying, I really value David work. that's usually the conversations you're having at home.
And they called Amazon, and they went, what the hell? And they went, well, see here, you said this, and Alexa thought that, and then you said this. And it's like, well, I don't care what Alexa thought. I didn't tell it to do anything. But,
you know, that's right.
They're listening all the time, you know? But they do.
In this show, you take a more lighthearted approach to it, you know, where they're working through just their own personal quandaries. And
yeah, they're more like, hey, you don't have to be so quick. Tell them you don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas most people's heads jump to like death and destruction.
Terminator.
Terminator. Exactly.
Which will bring up a question in a moment. But the one other question about the show, the other interesting thing I thought that you did with it was, everything, it almost reminded me of Toy Story, the movie, where the inanimate objects are such the focus that you don't see the faces of the humans.
Yeah, that's cool. It's always that
the people are
shoulder down shot.
The people are literally props. And I thought obviously it was a conscious decision.
Oh, yeah. So we decided, okay, if they're going to be the focus of this thing, now let's face it, they don't move a whole hell of a lot, you know?
Yeah, you fools.
I mean, Alexa, you know, just sits there, okay? And Siri can kind of move in and out a little bit. But so we said, okay, if this is going to work, we can see the humans moving around in the background, but they got to be out of focus. And whenever they get real close to talk to one of the devices, we cut them off at the neck. Because if you see the humans, then it's going to be about the humans.
Right.
And so you can hear the humans, you know, and of course, some of the stuff, as you say, Toy Story, it's like, what do these guys talk about when, like, we're not paying attention? And some of it, though, is they get involved. You know, there's a little romance going on in the background between humans. And they start to insert themselves into that romance.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
they begin to kind of, you know, they screw with the people who own them, you know? And it's like, wait, who just called me? Why did I get a text? Do you know this other woman? I mean, you know, they just – so it's like – so, yes, the decision was – how do you make them the stars? And the answer was, you just don't. You can hear the humans and you can sort of see their bodies and know they're there, but it's not about them. You keep the devices in the foreground. And we thought that would be kind of fun and an interesting challenge.
You give the actors the Waylon Jennings Dukes of Hazzard treatment where you only see their hands and body and no faces. And
yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
To bring it to current day, you started MacGyver a number of years ago. This is, if you talk to, the media, quote unquote, thought leaders, this is the new way to do media. It's snackable. No one's forced to sit down for a half hour.
Short attention span theater.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Because on the Santa Fe Network, this is the first piece of our original programming. We launched this New Mexico streaming channel about a year ago, and we said, okay, first year we'll just sort of aggregate content that's out here, and then second year we'll start producing our own content. But we decided it all has to be short. It's like, well, let's make something for 3 minutes or 5 minutes, max 10 minutes long. Because if you can't find an audience that's for something that's 10 minutes long, what makes you think you're going to find it if it's a half hour or an hour long? And then you've spent that money.
Yeah. And I find myself going down those rabbit holes of shows like this, and you find things like this, and you watch one, and all of a sudden I've watched every single one of them in one sitting, and you're like, oh, man, I got to find something else.
Yeah,
whereas it's a lot harder to do when it's a half hour, whatever it might be. And then sometimes, like you said, you hit a lull and you burn out and you're no longer interested.
Yeah, I'm working my way through the X-Files again right now, and there's 224 episodes, I think, and they're an hour apiece.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at this a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
throw it away.
Talk to you in a month, John. Have fun.
Yeah, exactly. He comes out sweating.
I'll tell you, my wife really appreciates it.
By the way, no good divorce lawyer, because by the time you're done watching all those episodes, your wife probably left you. Yeah. So
very true. Very true.
That's not exactly her favorite genre.
No. So let's talk a little bit about AI in general. As we mentioned earlier in this episode, there's basically two types of AI. There's more what Siri and Alexa currently are, which are what they call weak or narrow AI, and then there's the eventual what they call strong AI, and when it becomes the strong AI, it's when it can pass the Turing test or fool us into thinking it is human. And
that's the scary AI. Don't use strong. They should just use scary. We're like, no, I'm nothing to see here. I'm your friend.
And according to what we know, that doesn't exist yet. Did you, when you were creating the show and just in general, obviously AI interests you, otherwise this whole series wouldn't exist. Did you consider those and how they impact, where we are versus where we're going?
Well, there's something you need to know about AI. AI is kind of a catch-all term that really just means, new shit computers can do. Okay. I mean, literally, if you really kind of dig down, and what they mean is, how fast can a machine actually learn? What is it learning? Okay. And what does it do with what it's learning? And, obviously this gets explored in, lots of TV shows and movies and, what happens when what appears to be a machine seems to sort of develop consciousness. Okay.
Right.
I personally, I'm not really frightened of AI. I mean, because at the end of the day, we're building this stuff. We can decide if it should have limits, what those limits should be. And truth be told, I'm more afraid of humans than I am of machines. I mean, let's face it. There have been numerous civilizations on this planet, and they tend to not last as long as they think they're going to last. And their downfalls are usually come from lots of things, but it usually doesn't come from the technology they've created, whatever that technology happens to be. It usually comes because of their humanness, okay? And there are power struggles and resource issues and all those kinds of things. It's just as likely that, if we allow these machines to do all the things they might be capable of, you know, they may help solve a lot of the problems that we are struggling with now as a civilization in terms of management of resources and waste and all that kind of stuff. So I, for one, I mean, I know it's easy to go right to that place of they're going to take over and eliminate us. Well, again, I think the likelihood is we're probably more likely to eliminate ourselves than
hopefully we can find a way to use them to live in harmony with ourselves and them, and then we don't hit that. But yeah, that's the thing everyone worries about is we keep saying, well, what's the future going to hold? Well, let's make sure we can get to the future, you know, before we really worry about it.
And you know, I'm actually working on a serious tech project using AI, but it allows people, and I mean, I'll give you just a hint of it, but essentially it has to do with allowing people to create personalized fiction that has applications in education, in self-help, in, you know, dealing with medical crisis, in entertainment. But the likelihood is, you know, we can interact with this AI and it can offer us the opportunity to change or improve as humans, rather than simply assume, oh, this stuff is going to go berserk and come back and kill us.
Yeah, because that is has become the trope. That is what everyone just goes to, whether it's because of movies like The Terminator or The Matrix, or because of, you know, people like, you know, Elon Musk and other scientists saying, hey, these are things we got to worry about. It is where people go to. And it's kind of refreshing to hear you talk about, no, there's so many other possibilities that we really need to be focusing on than just the evil.
Yeah, I mean, people, but I think that's just because in fiction, people love to look at the worst case scenario, not the best case scenario. It's I've heard interviews with actors, producers, and writers from the original Star Trek series who are working with Gene Roddenberry, and you know, Star Trek is the one future show where everything is written to be essentially utopia. And his big rule, and when they first started doing the original series, was no conflict or no battles, whatever. And all the rest of the writers were like, well, how is this going to be entertaining
What do we do?
What makes this interesting, Gene?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool that they can transport, but other than that, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, we often, I think, take what happens in pop culture, you know, the movies, the TV shows, and just assume, well, that's the way it'll play out.
You know, a lot of times you don't even realize you're doing that. It's just one of those things where you see it and it becomes ingrained in you and you go, oh, well, this is what's going to happen.
And there's also, I think, just a there's a jump that people make in their reasoning and their logic that makes some sense, but it's not 100%. And that is that because we as humans have some negative qualities up to and including hurting the earth, that once the machines, the artificial intelligence, are smart enough to outthink us, they're going to realize, well, everything would be better off if the humans didn't exist. But that's also like thinking about your wacky uncle who drinks too much at the holidays.
Just like, kill him.
It's like, while there certainly are some negative aspects to what he does, it doesn't mean that he needs to be wiped off the face of the planet. And if these machines truly are that intelligent or even conscious, they might realize that as well.
Also, I think part of it is, let's face it, the rate of technology development is at this point, you know, not linear, it's geometric.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, what has happened literally in the last 100 years is almost beyond comprehension if you consider how quickly the population of the world has grown in the last 100 years and how much has changed as a result of these technologies. So I think some of it is also just a kind of understandable reaction to the pace of change. And it's like, you know, before you can really understand and adopt and kind of integrate a technology, boom, a lamb, along comes another technology. Right. And you go, I don't even understand how the one I'm trying to integrate works. And now you're handing me another one.
Yes.
And
I don't understand that. It's so one evil. After that.
Right. So I think it's just a kind of little bit of a freak out of this is all happening too fast. It can't end well. You know,
I am. All I want to do is program this damn Palm Pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. Palm Pilot. And we're at war.
How do we get there?
And you think about it, okay, it's like most of these technologies, most of this AI stuff is designed to how can we get better at selling shit to people, okay? So their goal is just to sell you stuff, all right? It's like they don't want to take over your life. They don't want to, you know, they just want to see if they can sell you things because, you know, we have built a consumer economy civilization of trade and markets and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Ruler is named Amazon, and that's our AI that we really need to be watching out for.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, okay, so maybe you should just stop buying so much stuff, and then the technology becomes a little less frightening, at least to me. I mean, you know, let's just say I find it more intriguing and potentially exciting than I find it frightening. And to the extent that it's frightening, it's either the way humans are going to react to it or it's the way humans are going to abuse it. That to me is where the dangers are, not in the technology itself. Maybe I'm naive, you know, I don't pretend to understand all of these things, but, you know, I mean, you just sort of look at the course of human development and the issue is rarely, you know, the technology. The issue is us.
I think you kind of put a good cherry on top of it there. When you think about every problem we've ever had over the course of the history of this world, we like to go back and blame it on whether it could be the nuclear bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Well, that was people doing that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Every step along the way, we've been the ones that have stuck our foot in it, except for maybe the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. But other than that, it's been us putting our
foot
in it.
And we're going to find out that future us went back in time and somehow triggered
that. Off that asteroid. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Just give it time.
We'll figure that out.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And, you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long-term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it, so... All you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get now. Started. For a very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. Nation, we want pictures of your dogs. That's just a personal request from me, but while you look for a good one, let me tell you about something near and dear to my and Brent's hearts. Your dog's health. You may have noticed lots of dogs suffering from health issues these days. Joints, odors, it's not good. Actress Katherine Heigl noticed these issues too, and after a ton of research, there was one place she found we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she created Superfood Complete, food for your four-legged friend that's made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Her company, Badlands Ranch, also supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Now, I know Brent has used Superfood Complete with his lovable meatballs, and they absolutely love it. He said it's easy to prepare, both his guys grow crazy for it, and he loves knowing what he's giving them is healthy and full of ingredients that are actually beneficial to his little rapscallions. You can try it for yourself by going to BadlandsRanch.com/hysteria and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/hysteria today.
But now, thank you for that. Before we let you go, we have to talk to you a little bit about that other guy that we mentioned before, MacGyver, and what a series, what a legacy. So
it's become it's like whatever Einstein, yeah, whatever MacGyver, like that is a hell of a thing to permeate into the cultural zeitgeist, as John likes to put it.
Yeah, it's become a verb and a non-proper noun.
Yeah,
it's just. So how tell us a little bit about the genesis of it, Lee. Like you said, you started writing the show. Tell us about that a little bit.
So here's really kind of how it came to be. When I told them that the idea they had was not really workable, and they said you had to fix it. So I came up with a number of things, went into the network, and they rejected all of them. So I finally, in desperation, got all my writer friends into a room. I locked the door. I had every inebriant they could have possibly wanted. And I said, we're not leaving this room till I have a kick-ass idea to get me out of this pilot deal. And they said, well, what do you got? So I told them everything I had tried pitching to the network. I mean, I'd had three or four network meetings at that point. And they went, nah, And I said, I got nothing. That's why you're here. I got absolutely nothing. And there was this long pause. And one of my writer friends said, yeah, okay, let's go with that. I said, let's go with what? They said, let's go with nothing. I said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, look, man, James Bond, he gets all these toys from Q at the beginning. And Indiana Jones, he's got the hat and the gun and the whip. Our guy, he's got nothing. And there was another long pause, and I went, oh, my God, that's it. We send this guy. He's an action-adventure character. We send him in, and he's got nothing, and he's got to figure it out along the way. And I thought, well, if we take the gun away from him and he can't shoot back, then he's got to figure out another way to solve the problem. So when nothing meant let's take the gun away too, no guns, all right? And he's going to have to figure out a way to solve the problem without that. And then, when I was like 10 or 11, my dad gave me a Swiss Army knife and said, keep this with you. It's the best tool you'll ever have. Mm-hmm. I suppose they've come out with Leatherman tools now, but, same deal, basically.
Right.
The duct tape showed up at some point. The whole idea was, instead of going in there and just blasting everybody away, he had to figure out another way of doing it. And it turned out, because I looked at this years later when I discovered that by more accident than any planning, I ended up owning the rights to MacGyver. I said, why did this become so popular? Because it was sold in like 75 foreign countries, and it run nonstop for the last 32 years. So we're talking billions of people at this point, you know? Mm-hmm. And at number one, he didn't use a gun. Okay, whether you're for guns or against guns in this country, I'm not interested in that debate. I didn't do it out of moral reasons. I took the gun away for dramatic reasons, okay? Right. But the fact is, most of the world's population doesn't have access to firearms and doesn't really want access to firearms. And that made this character kind of accessible. And then, of course, you know, that led to the ingenuity, the resourcefulness, the creativity, you know, MacGyvering stuff, right? Well, again, in Western or developed countries, we want something, we go to a store, we buy it. It breaks, we throw it out, we go buy another one. Most of the rest of the world, they looked at MacGyver and said, we do what this guy does every day just to survive.
Yeah, right. That's really good point.
And so they went, we dig this guy because we know what this is. We do it every day. All right.
It's like when you hear the stories about Cuba keeping their cars moving.
Yeah.
Ever since the 50s, when nobody, you know, since all the exporting and importing problem,
yeah, they got,
you know,
pieces of everything, boats on them and everything.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Keep it going.
Exactly. I mean, who knows how they keep those cars going, but they do.
Right.
So, and then no matter how sort of frightening or intractable the situation was, MacGyver always maintained a sense of humor and humility.
Right.
He was always the smartest guy in the room. He never acted like the smartest guy in the room. You know, James Bond is like really smug, you know, oh, shaken, not stirred. It's like, get over yourself, dude. You guys haven't had an empire in how long now, you know? But MacGyver was just like, he's just the guy next door. He just happens to know everything, all right? And I said, wow, those are really, I mean, I realized those were the keys, or what I call the MacGyver core values, that made people all over the world just fall in love with this character. And so, you know, the more I looked at it, I said, you know, those aren't bad tools, management tools for the next, you know, for this century, because I got four grown children, I got four grandchildren, you know, not hard to imagine them having children. And I went, you know what, I'm going to bring MacGyver back on all these different platforms if I can. We're working on a big budget feature film with Lionsgate. There's a new TV series on CBS. I'm an executive producer on that. I have a book out called The MacGyver Secret, which is kind of a, you know, how to tap into your inner MacGyver to solve anything. So, and I've got a host of other MacGyver projects coming down the turnpike.
Very nice.
Like, you know what? It's like, avoid conflict. Don't pick up a gun, because conflict usually just leads to more conflict. Doesn't get you anywhere. Two, that resourcefulness, creativity. How do you turn what you have into what you need? Because we're all going to have to do that now. I mean, let's face it. We're a global civilization, okay? There is no country in the world, including the United States, that can say we have all the resources we'll ever need. We can roll up our borders. The rest of you can go to hell. We'll be just fine.
Right.
We can't. Nobody can do that anymore. We're all
right.
You're exactly right.
Okay. And then, you know, okay, we all have these problems to deal with on a global basis. Helps to maintain a sense of humor and humility, because a laughing and open mind is much more likely to come up with a really good solution than a frightened, angry, or resentful mind.
I don't know. I think humans work their best when they're backed in a corner and terrified. You know, and in masses. That's usually when we, you know, frightened masses have the best decision-making skills I've found.
So, Lee, you know, one of the things that I've about MacGyver that I've always been curious about, you know, you and others were in the writer's room coming up with these situations for him, and then also coming up with how he would get out of them. Now, the layman like myself watches it and goes, wow, you know, you can use those four items to do this crazy thing to help him get out of the situation, whatever the situation might be. When you were in the writer's room, were you using more kind of just generic workman logic? Like, oh, yeah, this sounds like it would make sense. Or did you have scientists in there saying, or not scientists, but, you know, learned people about physics and electronics and things saying, right, you know, this is how you would actually do that?
One point of clarification. I wrote the pilot. I didn't stay with or run the series. Other people did that.
Okay.
But when I wrote the pilot, I mean, I'm a kind of technical guy, but I went out and hired myself a consultant who knew chemistry and physics and all that kind of stuff. Cause I went, you know, I'm not a techie, you know, I'm a writer, I'm a storyteller. And sure enough, when the series got picked up, I start getting calls from the writers going, man, how the hell did you do this stuff? We don't know this stuff. You know, the network wants the same thing you did in the pilot. We can't come up. I said, okay, calm down.
For a nominal fee, I can teach you.
That's right. You know, I gave him the number of the guy and I said, hire this guy, make him a consultant, and he will help you. And that's exactly what they did. They probably had a bunch of consultants over the course of the years. I know they used consultants on the new MacGyver show. And the way it usually works is they kind of say, hey, we want to do something like this. What could we come up with? And my rule when I was writing the pilot was it doesn't have to be possible. It just has to be plausible. You know, it can't be Tony Stark, you know, where he throws his arm out and a robot forms itself around him and then he flops. You know, Tony Stark's an engineer. Okay. But, you know, to me, that's magic. You know, that's engineering. Yes. And part of the joy of MacGyver was, hey, could that really work? And you remember the show Mythbusters, you know, it's like their most popular episode was once a year they do a show like, okay, we're going to pull all these things from the MacGyver TV show and see if they really work, you know. And some of them didn't, some of them didn't, but it had to be plausible. It didn't actually have to be possible. But the whole idea was, call it situational awareness. Right. What do you have? What's around you and how could you do it? And then, you know, sometimes the consultants will say, well, if he was in this situation or if he was in this kind of a room, then there could be this, this, and this. And I go, oh, yeah, no, I can shift that. It doesn't have to be that kind of a room. It could be that kind of a room. You know, oh, is there a janitor's closet? Sure. Sure, there's a janitor's closet, you know. Oh, he's in this kind of a lab. Oh, he's got this kind, you know. I mean, and in some ways today it's almost easier because so many things are, you know, electronic now, digital.
Right.
You would think that's going to make it harder. Actually, it makes it easier because you have all of these really interesting elements that are in cell phones or in cars or in, you know, whatever. So we use consultants and they still do now. And the consultants and the writers kind of work it back and forth until they get to that sweet spot where it's fun and it makes sense and it's plausible. And it's, you know, and it's cool to watch.
Absolutely. And you know, that you, it is cool to watch. And it's been cool to watch for millions of people for the past, what, over 30 years now. My last question for you, with the ride that MacGyver has been from you ideating the pilot all the way through to today and working on all of these projects so many years later, what's been the most surprising or cool thing to happen specifically as it relates to your affiliation with MacGyver?
Well, I guess I would say the coolest thing to happen keeps happening, and that is I keep running into people, and when they learn that, you know, I created MacGyver or something to do with it, the stories they come to me with, like, oh man, you know, I was in this situation, or I do stuff and everybody calls me MacGyver, or that thing changed my life. I mean, I gave a talk at JPL about my book, The MacGyver Secret. Okay. JPL is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, design projects, you know, they're the ones who land the rovers on Mars you know, Voyager and all that stuff. Okay. And it blew me away. I mean, it gave the talk and then they said, okay, we'll take a few questions. Well, the question period went on way too long. And when they cut it off, I said, you know, I'll stay here. And there was a line of like 50 people there, and they came up and they didn't have questions. They just said, I want to thank you because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for MacGyver.
I figured you're going to say that, like they saw that, like, I want to be a part of this. I want to do that. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's like, man, I got to learn how to do what this guy does. And I realized I got to go to college or I got to go to engineering school and I was blown away because realizing, I mean, I kind of know it as an intellectual fact that this has affected millions, if not tens of millions or billions of people. But the number of people who have come up to me and for one reason or another said, that show changed my life. I got to tell you guys, that just blows me away. Absolutely. Because, you know, you don't expect when you make a TV show that it's really going to change people's lives. And it does to this day. I went to an event here in Santa Fe last night. And, at the end of the event, a woman came up to me and said, my son is a hotshot. That means he's the guy who goes in and fights forest fires, which, as you know, are all over the West right now.
Right.
And she described an incident where he saved a bunch of people. And she said they call him MacGyver. That was his favorite awesome. Show growing up. I never do this, but would you be willing to take a picture with me? Because it would mean so much to him. And I said, of course I'll take a picture with you, you know. But this happens to me, you know, on a regular basis. And every time it happens, I'm just blown away that it has meant so much to so many people.
And I have to imagine that even the people that you haven't had a chance to connect with, you can just see it for yourself. They don't need to tell you. You can just – I mean, even the book, The Martian, Andy Weir wrote The Martian, and then they made the Matt Damon movie. I mean, everything that happens in that book and that movie – feels like here's MacGyver in the next century.
In fact, he says, I'm going to science the shit out of this. He should have said, I'm going to MacGyver the shit out of this. Yes.
I believe in an interview, Andy Weir basically said, I wanted to do MacGyver on Mars.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect.
That's great. Well, I think that's the perfect place to stop. Lee, you've been more than generous with your time, and we couldn't thank you more for it.
Yes, we really greatly appreciate you coming on here and sharing your stories with us. And it is a fantastic show, and we want to remind everyone, make sure you check out Santa Fe Network.
They go to santafenetwork.tv and check out the new series. And Lee, where else can they find you in the interwebs world?
If you're interested in the book, or I have an online video course, you can go to MacGyverSecret.com. And then we have a general MacGyver website called MacGyverGlobal.com. But check out our own devices, because it's a lot of fun. It's the latest thing I've done, and I think people will get a kick out of it.
Absolutely. It is a blast.
Everyone, go enjoy the show, Our Own Devices, Santa Fe Network. Lee Zlotoff, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to talking to you again over your next project.
Super. Thanks, guys. Take care.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.